This week, we are going to be studying Judges 16, 21 through 31. It is the end of the story of Samson, where we have been studying for the last few weeks, and it will be our last passage for consideration in the book of Judges, which we have been studying for several months. So we'll finish Samson today and have a conclusion for the book as a whole, as well as looking forward to where we go from here. And I will note, this is not the actual end of the book of Judges, but if you've been following along chronologically, you know that we studied it out of order somewhat and have already covered the remainder of the book. In today's passage, the last judge of the book of Judges will come to his tragic end. When we last left off, he had been betrayed to the Philistines, and here we will read of his death in captivity to them. Your passage for consideration then is Judges 16, 21 through 31, and if you haven't read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. When we last left our hero, he had been deceived by his lover Delilah. Delilah had been paid by the Philistines to uncover the secret of Samson's strength. That secret was his hair, which was an important part of his Nazarite vow to God. When Delilah cut Samson's hair, his great strength left him, and thus, in verse 21, the Philistines were able to seize Samson. Having seized him, they chained him, and, do not neglect this point, they gouged out his eyes. This, I believe, recalls the overarching theme of the book of Judges, that every man did what was right in his own eyes. In Samson's story, he had demanded a Philistine woman because she was the one who was right in his own eyes, explicitly. And here's where it all ended up. He did what was right in his own eyes, and in the end it cost him his eyes. It is just the kind of irony we expect from a book laden with irony, and a fitting end to a wild period of time. Samson was brought bound to Gaza, a capital of the Philistines, the same one where Samson had torn down the gates, and they put him in prison. We have noted before that prisons are not prescribed as punishments in the law of Moses, but for those who caused damage and owed restitution, forced labor, that is, slavery, was prescribed. Samson, of course, had caused a lot of damage to the Philistines. He had killed over 1,000 people, he had burned crops, he had torn down Gaza's gates, and so Samson was put to slavery, grinding grain in the prison mill, a lowly place for someone who had once been a great man. Surely a humbling experience for the once proud noble who had ostentatiously demanded a Philistine bride. But we read in verse 22 that his hair began to grow back. Conventionally, if a Nazarite failed in his vow, he was required to shave his head and begin the period of his vow over again. In this case, Samson had failed in his vow by allowing his hair to be cut, but the hair growing back reminds us that his lifetime vow was still a lifetime vow. Though he had briefly fallen from grace, Samson was still a Nazarite, and God was still with him. And since God was with him, he could regain his strength. The Philistines didn't know that, though. They thought Samson's strength was permanently gone. He knew something they didn't, and so, despite his low position, he had something of the upper hand. While Samson was in the prison, his captors were planning a celebration. Samson had been a rebel within their empire, one who today would have been called a terrorist. His capture was a big deal. They planned to celebrate by gathering at the temple of their imaginary god Dagon and offering him a sacrifice of praise. They wrongly attributed Samson's capture to Dagon's efforts, but of course, Dagon had nothing to do with it. Jehovah, the God of Israel, had allowed Samson to be captured. This was part of the plan from the beginning. We recall the prophecy that had been given at his birth, that he would begin the work of freeing Israel from the Philistines, but not end it. God would be using these unlikely circumstances to bring about that prophecy. And so when their hearts were merry, likely a euphemism that they were drunk with wine, they called for Samson to be brought out of the prison to the temple for their entertainment. And so a young man fetched Samson and led him by the hand to the temple of Dagon. Now, the exact construction of the temple of Dagon is unknown, but evidently it had a roof which was supported by several columns. These columns must have been close together, such that a person could stand between them and reach one on either side. The temple also had roof access, so there were revelers both in and on top of the temple. The passage describes that there were 3,000 people on the roof. Samson likely was not inside the building, but outside in something like a colonnade. Samson, having been humiliated, called on God for help, asking that he could regain his strength just once so that he could be avenged on Philistia, and God honored the request. And so Samson performed his final deed. He asked the young man attending him to allow him to lean on the pillars of the temple, and once he had been guided there, he pushed against the two central columns with all his might. The columns fell, perhaps causing a domino effect, knocking down other nearby columns, and the roof collapsed. Presumably, many inside the temple or in the colonnade were crushed by falling debris, while many, or maybe even all, of the people on the roof fell to their deaths. No count is given for the number dead, but we are told that the number killed in this event was higher than all those Samson had killed in his life. So at least another 1,030 people died. Samson's final words were, "Let me die with the Philistines." And indeed, he did. Thereafter, Samson's family claimed his body. We recall that they had likely been on good terms with the Philistine government, and Samson was buried in his father's tomb back in his hometown between Zorah and Eshtaol. And thus ends the story of Samson. He dealt a great blow to Philistia by destroying the temple of their god. God had promised in Leviticus 26:8 that with his blessing, 5 of Israel's men would put to flight 100, and 100 would put to flight 10,000. Samson outdid even those numbers. He was one man who, with God's help, could put to flight 1,000 alone. He had judged Israel 20 years. In this story, we see clear examples of God's plan and of God's redemption. We must note very clearly from the outset, all of this was foreordained. Before Samson was even born, the prophecy was given that he should be a Nazarite from birth, and that in that capacity he would begin the work of saving Israel from Philistia. Clearly, God had this ending in mind from the outset, and he empowered Samson to bring it about. We also note that that ending, which had been foreordained, depended heavily on Samson's decisions. Had he not chosen to take a Philistine bride, he wouldn't have ended up where he did. Had he not chosen to hang around Delilah, he wouldn't have ended up where he did. Had he not chosen to reveal his secret, he wouldn't have ended up where he did. So God knew the outcome from the beginning, despite the fact that the outcome depended heavily on human decision-making. And that tells us one of two things about God. Either he is in control of human decisions, or he is able to accurately predict human decisions. And I would suggest that the line between the two is very fine. If you've been listening here for a while, you likely know that I am unapologetically of the opinion that God has predestined human decisions. We are responsible for the decisions we make, but decision-making is still somewhat illusory. Really, there's only one path that any of us will follow. There is a plan. If you'd like to hear more on the topic of predestination, you could listen to our messages Birth of Jacob and Esau, God's Plan, published October 16th of 2016, or Moses Returns to Egypt, Pharaoh's Heart, published August 6th of 2017. I don't want to dig into predestination today because today's passage doesn't demonstrate predestination any more than foreknowledge, but it does demonstrate that God has a plan for humanity. God knows where we are going, and he intervenes to bring about the circumstances he chooses, and ultimately he uses those circumstances to glorify himself. We see that clearly in the story of Samson. And he both gave and took the gift of strength to get Samson to the final destination. And that final destination brought about the destruction of God's enemies in such a way that we are still here today glorifying God for having done it. So, that is how God works, and that is his purpose in working. But we note that in accomplishing that, the situation is not always comfortable for us. Samson felt the sting of betrayal from someone he loved. He ended up with his eyes pierced out. He was humiliated in the sight of his enemies. He died a painful death. Samson had a miserable end. Sometimes such must be so for the glory of God. Now, in Samson's case, we might argue that his miserable end was just. Samson had committed serious sins, and in doing so, he brought about his own undoing. But suffering is not always just, and it is not always to be blamed on the one who suffers. Christ's end was not wildly dissimilar from Samson's. He too was betrayed and pierced and humiliated and died. This also was part of God's plan to bring about his glory. But unlike Samson, Jesus was not at all deserving of his punishment. Often we will all suffer in life. When we do, let us remember that no suffering is without purpose. Everything ultimately works together for the greater good of those who believe and for the glory of God. And when there is suffering, let us not blame the one who suffers in every circumstance, because we know that suffering is not always deserved. But let us also be certain not to accuse God of some injustice. As has been noted, He was willing to suffer the worst sort of circumstances for us. He is sympathetic to us, and when we suffer, He suffers beside us. Samson is also a potent picture of God's redemption. We have established that Samson deserved his penalty, or at least some penalty. He had been overcome more than once by his lusts, and in the end he had allowed his vow to God to be broken. The direct result was that he found himself blind and humiliated in a Philistine prison. However, despite Samson's failures, God did not abandon him. God didn't have to give Samson back his strength so that he could defeat Philistia and die that day. God could have left Samson alone to languish in prison for decades to come, and he could have killed all the same Philistines some other way. But instead, Samson was permitted to get the upper hand on his enemies and to die quickly rather than living in extended suffering. This was a grace to him. And so we see that when Samson's hair began to grow, God redeemed him. I have no doubt that Samson was penitent. And so, even in this strange way, God showed him mercy. We likewise have the hope, through the blood of Christ, that God will show us mercy when we falter. He does not cast us off forever. He remembers us and He cares for us. And so we should take it to heart that when we fail, our circumstances are not a lost cause. God can take any circumstance and turn it for His glory, as He did here. Samson's sin and his misery were not so great that God could not triumph in the situation. Likewise, there is no situation which is beyond God's reach. In anything, God can and ultimately will be glorified. And so with that, we have reached the end of the book of Judges. And that, in my mind, occasions a little review. The book opened with Joshua still alive, handing out portions of land to the tribes of Israel and urging them to keep up the fight against Canaan. But Joshua died, and when his generation passed, there rose a generation which had not seen God's amazing works in the wilderness firsthand. That generation turned aside from pure service to Jehovah, the one true God. The law of Moses had blessed the people of Israel with a decentralized system of government in which Jehovah was king, but as the people turned away, that system started to break down. There weren't enough good people choosing to do right to keep the evildoers under control, and thus there came a time in which every man did what was right in his own eyes. The book of Judges contains a series of cycles in which the people turned away from God and were punished by their enemies until a righteous judge rose up to rescue them. Under his rule, the people would turn back to God for a while, but when he died, they would start the cycle all over again. Many of these judges had some particularly interesting stories, often marked with irony and unexpected twists. But with Samson, these wild days begin to draw to a close. Philistia had grown in power so as to become a major opponent to Israel, and after Samson, the people had finally had enough of foreign oppression. There is one more judge to come after Samson, named Samuel, whose book I expect we will consider before the end of the year. In Samuel's rule, the people demanded a king, a powerful centralized executive, to deliver them from Philistia once and for all. But they got more than they had bargained for. So then, we are done with Judges. Where do we go from here? For the next few weeks, we'll be studying some Psalms, as we conventionally do between books, before we move on to Ruth. Ruth is a short book which describes the lives of some people who lived during the time of the Judges. So, if you enjoyed our discussion on the book of Judges, I hope you'll be back to join us for the next book as well. To conclude then, we've finished Judges by studying our final judge from the book, Samson. Samson was a man blessed with a great gift and also with a tragic flaw. In the end, his weakness sent him into captivity in Philistia, where he died. But Samson's life and suffering were not purposeless. God graciously redeemed Samson despite his failures, and he used Samson's circumstances to deal a great blow against the Philistines, setting the stage for events to come.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.